And welcome back to our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today from the Consumer Product Safety Commission, we have product safety investigator Marianne McGurty-Saber back.
Hi there.
How are you?
Hi there. I always joke by certain guests, I know the time of the year when we sit down.
It's getting a little bit cold.
Yeah, when it gets cold, we're going to be talking a lot about, well, heat and generators and holiday safety. But I always like to get started with what's new in the recall business.
Yeah, so in the last several months, you know, for your listeners, I think there's a kind of a two product areas to focus on. Of course, CPSC looks at, you know, concerns in reference to products, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 12 months out of the year. In the last several months, however, we have begun to see a number of recalls concerning infant sleepers. So actually, just recently, we had put out a notice advising the consumers that we're now conducting a study because we begin to see some issues in terms of these particular sleepers. And unfortunately, there have been some injuries and deaths as well associated. If any of your consumers have these type of products, I would recommend that, one, you go check out our website. It is www.cpsc.gov, because there have been several different manufacturers, and then you can get the specifics as to what you need to do. We have seen 1,100 incidences, 73 deaths associated to this type of product. This goes really from 2005 straight through to June of this year. So we're sort of trying to evaluate what is the next steps in terms of industry testing, et cetera, and to see where we need to go from here. But number one, we always recommend that consumers use products as they are intended and for please and to read their directions. So I think in this particular incident, it is a product that has a certain time frame in terms of age of baby. And the use in terms of where we put it on putting it on a flat surfaces. But, you know, for all parents, you know, grandparents, et cetera, when we're using a product with our kids, our babies, of course, we want something that's safe. So you don't want to have that, I guess, precaution or fear that perhaps this could harm them.
If these things have been in production since 2005, that's several generations have been using these products. And that raises an interesting point, because I remember the last time you came in, they were just starting a big recall on these. And the issues were that the babies were past the time recommended by the manufacturer. They were for newborns, and much larger children were being placed in this. So you're looking at our misuse of products and protecting us against ourselves as well.
You're right, because for families, you know, with these or any type of children's product, you know, we perhaps, you know, a consumer is using this product for a fussy baby, and it is working. And they don't want to step away from something that is already working, or not begin to realize that, you know, there can be hazards associated with perhaps extending the life of something. You know, obviously, as I said, we want to use products safely. I mean, we want to make sure and know that whatever we're using can't harm us, our kids, our environment. So by sort of looking at this particular product for, you know, obviously several different manufacturers that are out there and making determinations as to, you know, how are they being used, what's happening, and conducting these studies, I think it's probably, you know, best for all consumers. But obviously, having that education and being aware of what's out there, you know, CPSC provides this information through a variety of different audiences to young families, through social media, Facebook, Twitter, Flickr, parenting blogs. We really want to get the information out as quickly as possible.
When I mentioned that 2005, you know, grandma bought it for the first grandchild, and then, oh, sister Dunn has a baby, and it gets passed on over there. And then it's the brother, and then the first one has another kid. And some items get just passed around back and forth, back and forth.
And there's also wear and tear as well.
Mm-hmm. And homes with multi-generations sharing a home, a product can stay and be in use for decades.
Right. So again, and like I said, go to CPSC's website if you have one of these products, or perhaps you want to get a little bit of background as to some recalls that have occurred and where we're, you know, kind of moving forward from there. And the second issue talks about liquid nicotine. And what we're really focusing here are the child-resistant packaging. We have had some recalls in the past, in the last several months, that talk about these type of products and the fact that they can be very harmful should a child or a pet come in contact with these. And, of course, as we've seen, really, this type of product become much more prevalent in the home. Maybe adults, users, are not being as careful, you know, to minimize the availability of them, or also minimize, you know, direct skin contact, that it comes in contact perhaps with your skin and maybe there is, you know, transfer issues. So again, we've had some recalls in the past. So check out the website for any, perhaps if you, you know, have these in your home. And two, you know that we are looking at where can we make improvements, you know, in something where we have begun to see some issues. So let's try to figure out how we can make sure that the product is being used safely for, you know, for families.
And again, it's not that the nicotine itself is contaminated or that the medicine in a bottle, there's an issue with the medicine. It's the packaging itself that you're worried about.
And, you know, and if consumers do, you know, find where they have purchased these liquid nicotine bottles and they do not have child-resistant packaging, reach out to us. Give us a call toll-free at our hotline number. It's 1-800-638-2772. Or go to the hotline and fill out a consumer incident report. We want to take the appropriate steps, you know, with the manufacturer, the retailer, to make sure that, you know, if that is the case, we can get those products off the shelves and get that fixed.
What should we be reporting to the Product Safety Commission? Or what are some of the incidents that would say, hey, maybe I ought to pick up the phone and warn this before somebody else spills this down the front and the pet licks it up?
Well, you know, I mean, think about it from the time you got up this morning. Maybe perhaps you used a toaster oven and you put the bagel on there and then you got distracted. And then 30 minutes goes by. You go back into the kitchen. The toaster oven never turned off. The bagel is burned. Perhaps maybe there's some damage done to your countertop, but a fire did not occur. Or perhaps, you know, you had an incident this past, you know, say last weekend, where, you know, you had your child, your grandchild out, and she was riding her bike, or she was playing with a particular toy, and something happened. So you had to go to the emergency room. There are lots of different avenues and methods in which CPSC becomes aware of certain incidences. And then there also are sometimes where people will contact CPSC and say, hey, look, I wasn't using this product in the method, you know, in the way in which it was intended. However, this is what occurred. We had a number of years ago where a crib could be misassembled. And when it was misassembled, it created larger slats where there shouldn't be. So there have been incidences over the years where it is not specifically a particular hazard associated with the product. Sometimes it is a case where we begin, you know, getting these, you know, reports from consumers, from outside groups, from the medical community, that there has been some type of incident associated with a product. And also know that sometimes I think we all feel this way. I'm only one person. How could I possibly make a difference? But to be honest, our agency has had recalls in the past where there has been one incident. So we don't need the magic number of five incidences, injuries, deaths, fires for something to occur. We take each report that we receive from your listeners and evaluate it to determine what's the next course of action we need to take to find out, you know, a little more information regarding this particular case.
Again, I love the idea that somewhere there's a room and you guys are playing with crap.
Well, there is. And it's a variety of different things, to be honest with you.
Trying to do things wrong. It's anything from toy testing.
And it is phenomenal just to see from drop testing, from ovens in terms of flammability, because there are lots of features perhaps in the, say, the European market that, you know, has not made it or is just beginning to make it to the U.S. for a variety of different things. Or, you know, conducting spacing issues is, you know, how, you know, we have sizes that adhere to certain ages of, you know, the size of a head of a child at 9 1/2. You know, does it fit within this particular spacing here? Do we find a particular hazard? So our lab really is a wide range of, I guess, products and areas that we look at from year to year. And sometimes it is related to the industry. I mean, a couple years back, we began to see the introduction of hoverboards, probably this time of year, you know, into the marketplace. And with that, we then began to see where there were accidents, fires associated with these hoverboards. So CPSC is not set up that we don't test products prior to going to market. There are regulations for industry to follow. But as far as us testing it prior to hitting market, that's not the way the agency is set up. However, sometimes we become aware of situations through consumers, through the medical community, through your local officials. But what's most important really in the end is for people to know that one person, you know, can make a difference. And yes, we do want to hear from you should there be a concern on your part in terms of any type of consumer product.
It's not just the stuff that we buy. We've talked about thrift shops before and second market purchases and all of that. But it's also stuff that you buy online.
Yes.
And if it comes into this country, you guys are interested if it's not working right or if we're misinterpreting how to use it.
Sure.
If we're not
using
it right.
With the use of the internet, the amount of, you know, probably products that most consumers, you know, are purchasing has just, you know, all but increased. And with that, any company, and sometimes you do, when you make that purchase, you don't realize that perhaps what you just purchased is not, you know, coming from here in the U.S. It's coming from an outside company. But for any company that is doing business with a consumer in the U.S., so anything that you sit down at your computer and make a purchase with, they have to abide by our federal regulations. It's when you leave this country and make a purchase outside. So any country at all, and you're making a purchase in that country, then that is that country's rules and regulations. And yes, you know, part of our staff is looking at various items that are on, as you mentioned, secondary markets. We look for both concerns that we may find. We also look for companies that perhaps, you know, a company has a particular product recall. There's X amount of products that were recalled. We check to see that they are not taking those products and putting them in that second marketplace. These are recalled products that perhaps should have been either fixed or destroyed. So we are, you know, also working with that industry as well, because they are not interested in selling products that can be harmful to their customers. So they also work with CPSC in terms of if there is a concern, if someone, you know, raises an issue involving a product that is being sold on these secondhand market places, that they want to get that fixed.
We all think we're MacGyver and we need something. We've got an electronic or we've got some toy and we want it to do something that it's not supposed to do. So we buy stuff online and we think we're going to adapt and we make stuff fit. Whether it's round and it's square, we're going to hammer until it gets together. But you're looking out for us,
sure,
MacGyvers at the same time.
And also, too, sometimes I think perhaps with jury rigging, I mean, you know, you can use it in everyday products while you're reassembling that particular crib for the, you know, fifth time. Or you're pulling out those holiday lights and you're thinking, can I just get through another year with these lights?
You know? I'm sure I can string five of them. If I can do one, I'll buy myself
an extension cord. It's really easy to connect from one to the other. Right. Why shouldn't I?
Yeah, I got one plug. I can light the whole house off of it. Yeah.
Ingenious.
Yeah, we're all bright when it comes to that
stuff. Yes, of course.
But that's sort of what I love, when that we don't even have to be using this stuff right. and you're still looking after us. Because obviously if one Einstein comes up with an idea, somebody else
sure.
will. And it should have been foreseen.
And for, you know, companies, because sometimes, you know, people will say, well, doesn't manufacturer, you know, look for these things? Of course. But you don't know sometimes until the consumer is using the product and you begin to see where, and that's where we, in addition to, you know, our engineers, we also have people who look at the situation. You know, what is the behavior? What is it that happened here? What did the consumer do? How did it come to this outcome? So it all is really fascinating because it kind of takes that step forward, you know, and mm-hmm. looks at what happened and how can we remedy the situation so that situation doesn't happen again.
We all have a screw and glue piece of furniture
of
that has a shelf that's upside down. You know, we all do. I can't follow those instructions after
we all
a while.
Don't have engineers living in our house.
You know, they just, I defy any manufacturer to get to the lowest common denominator of us.
Right. And you know what? We also, when we speak with consumers, we also talk with them in terms of assembly, you know, who put it together? Oh, you put it together. Okay, well, talk to us about the directions. Mm-hmm. Were they easy to read? Did you have any difficulty? Did you have parts left over? You know, this is all as required from, you know, working with CPSC and the regulations that are out there, that, of course, we want to make sure that the instructions for consumers to assemble these products is easy to read.
Oh, boy, did you just open the door for the next the next conversation. But if you're just joining us, I'm Laura Lewis, and this is Our Delaware Valley. And today we're talking to product safety investigator Marianne McGurty-Siebert. She is, of course, with U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission. And if you have questions, if you want more information about what we're talking about, go to cpsc.gov, cpsc.gov. And they do have that hotline, 800-638-2772. CPSC has a list of everything that's ever been recalled. It has the remedies. If it was something that was as simple as you're supposed to remove one piece or you're supposed to write to the manufacturer and replace something, you've got it all there. But
you've been paying attention to what I've been saying over the years.
Heck yes. But everybody has that scene. It's the holiday season. You're screwing stuff together up to the last minute. And there is always a piece left over. It's the holiday gift giving season. And no matter who you are, you're going to re-gift. You're going to buy products that maybe are not age appropriate. You're going to see something magnificent in that thrift store window. Gift giving guides.
Yes.
Go for it.
Okay. So age appropriateness. Read the information that's on the product packaging. In other words, if you have a two-year-old and it says it's for children four and up, although I know you think that she's the most brilliant two-year-old that ever walked the face of the earth, and you feel very confident that she could handle this particular toy, that information is required by CPSC for manufacturers to put on there. Number one is a guide for consumers when they're making these purchases, but two, also to provide information, especially for families that have children three and under. That our biggest concern there is small parts. So products, toys that contain small parts will have warning labels on there that let you know that although it may not be visible, there are some small parts here on this toy. So for a child three and under, we don't recommend that you purchase it. For families, multiple ages, you know, my girls are now two young adults, but they're 2.5 years apart. And the younger one always felt as if she was the same age as the older sister. And why wasn't, you know, why can I not play with her toys? So for families, multiple ages, when you store toys, number one, you might need to not put everything into the toy box, the community toy box. So perhaps store it away in the older daughter's room. The use of the toy box in terms of just, you know, wear and tear. We talked about that a little bit as far as other products are concerned. And also to maintaining toys, look for breakage, potential hazards is probably pieces that have fallen off. Maybe it's a hand-me-down through the years. But number one, buying toys. We always want to make sure that it's age-appropriate. So be a label reader. Look for the age. Heed the recommendations on there. It is on there for a reason. Maintaining, you know, sometimes we see things that perhaps that is flame resistant, flame retardant. We look for other things on there in terms of perhaps arts and crafts, where their ages kind of go up a little higher in terms of 7, 8, 9 years old. If, you know, you receive a gift for your children and it is not age appropriate, perhaps your daughter is 2 and will be turning 3 in May. So, you know, hold on to that toy, put it away until she is age appropriate for it. And also for other products that are out there. So let's just say a bike, a scooter, they are designed. You could find one scooter for a 5-year-old, another for a 10-year-old, another for a 15-year-old. So 3 types of scooters, 3 types of bikes. You want to buy it that it is for the age of the child right now, not that they are going to grow into it in 5 years. And with any of these products, bikes, inline skates, scooters, buying the protective gear that goes along with it. We've been talking about helmets for a long time. We, as kids, did not have helmets. The people that had helmets when we were growing up were the pros. But today our kids are growing up, our grandchildren are growing up with bike helmets, and we are seeing with inline skates, scooters, etc., other types of those, you know, means in which to get around that kids are, you know, using helmets, wearing helmets. You talked a little bit about the secondhand market and, you know, children's products are expensive. Toys are expensive. So what's available, be it a hand-me-down, be it a thrift store, be it a friend, be it a family member that you receive secondhand. A couple of thoughts to keep in mind as far as children's products are concerned. As far as that bike helmet is concerned, you'll always want to look for exterior damage. If you see any breakage, any cracks on the outside, please throw them away. That, of course, means that the helmet was used in an accident. It did what it was supposed to do. It protected that head, but now it's time to discard it. You don't know about the integrity inside the helmet itself. So we don't recommend that you buy bike helmets from secondhand stores. Any type of product that you receive, be it through the thrift store, secondhand store, you can always, as you refer to, go to CPSC's website. Every recall that we've ever done in the agency's history is on there. What a great guide that you can look at. Everyone has a phone. We can all gain access through internet, or perhaps, you know, you do it at home when you sit down on your computer to look up to see if there were any issues associated with that particular toy or product that you want to buy. As far as other types of issues, sometimes you think sharp points, loud noises. And you also see in the industry where there will be groups that will come out and say the 10 worst toys, the 20 worst toys. We as an agency look at anyone who puts any type of information out there where there is a concern. However, we do have regulations and we have to follow those. And sometimes, you know, the list may include something that fits within a regulation. So we have to, you know, go under what regulations are and that CPSC follows. However, we do look at any suggestion, any list that it's put out there to determine that, you know, is there a particular hazard associated with this particular toy? But again, going back to, you know, sometimes we talk about buyer beware, but just as a parent and as a grandparent, know that the information that's available to you is a guide and it provides you education. It also, for the multiple ages family, I had 2.5 years apart. So sometimes when you have multiple ages within the house, it is appropriate for the older age child, but not for the younger. So in that category of 3 to 5, manufacturers do put warning labels on there for small parts that, you know, sort of gives you a heads up, provides you a little bit of guidance that you might want to put this particular toy away because it contains small parts and could be hazardous for, say, a child under the age of 3.
5-minute warning. Let's talk okay. about anything with a cord or anything with a generator. We're getting colder, so we're seeing space heaters coming out, generators because of like wind storms. You're right.
And tornadoes, power outages.
Nobody uses a generator in a calm moment.
Absolutely. So with the use of generators, please read information that's available to you. You may be given one. Look at the directions. Pay attention to the positioning of it. Sometimes people will not use it properly, will turn it around, and then what happens is that the gas is coming back into the house, and that's where the CO issue is. We talk about changing clocks and changing batteries. If We always recommend that families have at least one CO detector in the home. They're a little more expensive than the smoke detectors. So if you can only afford one, put it in the hallway near the bedrooms. This can address any type of issue so that you have, you know, that power outage, you have that generator, you want to get the heat rolling again, you want to get your appliances up and rolling. So use it accordingly. Pay attention to the directions, not using it inside. Once you have it outside, that you have it a certain distance from the house. If you have any concerns, perhaps, you know, your family is feeling ill, perhaps you don't have a CO detector in your house. Signs of carbon monoxide are just like the flu. We will take our kids to the pediatrician in a minute. But as adults, we will, you know, linger on and tough it through. So if there is a situation where you feel ill and you're out of your house, perhaps there is an issue in your home. And for our parents, you know, if they're in their original homes, what a great opportunity that we can do for them, that we put a carbon monoxide detector in a home. I actually just did an investigation a few months ago where a family had installed a CO detector in a home. This was a resident who had a permanent generator outside of her house. And 4 months later, her generator kicked on because the power went out. And 24 hours into that outage, that alarm sounded. There was issues in terms of gas coming into the house from that outside generator. So CO alarms can save lives. Use, you know, this opportunity for the holiday season to go to your parents and your grandparents and get the CO detector and install it for them.
What about cords and lights and stuff that comes down and the tree itself?
You know? So think about electricity, cords, lights, extension cords. Make sure that what you're using is properly labeled. If you buy lights, have still lights, look at the condition, the cords themselves. So we talked about jerry-rigging things, taping things up. This is electricity. Not a good idea. You think, oh, let me put it underneath a rug. It'll be out of the way. It's no longer a trip hazard. But then it becomes a fire hazard from the friction of going across. We never have enough outlets in our home, no matter how old your home is or how new your home is. Get one of those strip outlets so you can plug in multiple products. You talked about the holiday lights. We recommend that you never string more than three at a time, then stop it, and then begin the next string. As far as the tree, real or artificial, real tree, always want to make sure that it's kept well watered from the moment you buy it to you bring it into your house to get it in water right away. Keep it away from heating sources, ventilators, radiators, fireplaces. As far as the artificial tree is concerned, make sure it is fire resistant. If that tree is old and you're not seeing those tags on it anymore, maybe throw that out. As far as in and around the house, we look at trimmings, we look at candles. We use candles all throughout the year, but maybe there's an opportunity where you're using it on a dining room table. Perhaps you're using it in the foyer. We recommend that you stay in the room in which the candles are burning. Always try to remember extinguishing candles, turning lights off when you go to bed at night, when you leave the house to go out for the evening. Always look to see that you've extinguished candles. Turn off the holiday lights. I know you're proud of your displays. We don't want to come home to our house who there's been a potential fire. Unfortunately, we do see in the news each year during the holiday season where it's been lights, a tree that is dried out. Each of these things is just safety precautions. Check out CPSC's website to get all the details. www.cpsc.gov, or give us a call toll-free at the hotline number. It's 1-800-638-2772.
And when we go to your website, you do have tips and you have information about everything. You have all of the latest releases as far as recalls and recommendations, et cetera. It's all there. Is it in multiple languages?
It is. We do have various publications that are available. So if you have a question, you can always give us a call during the week and someone will answer the phone and provide that information, or leave a message and we can give you a call back.
You've got plenty of programming there, and it's all available, and it's all free, and it is at your website, cpsc.gov. That's CPSC, for Consumer Product Safety Commission, .gov. And the hotline number, 800-638-2772. But again, more information about everything that you need to know about keeping yourself and your family safe through the cold winter weather and through the holidays, cpsc.gov. And my guest today, Marianne McGurty-Sieber. She is a product safety investigator with the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission. Thanks for coming back.
Thank you. Have a good holiday season.
And you too. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been our Delaware Valley.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.